Hey, it's Joe Sanfrio. I'm the creator of the new Zodiacs, and you are listening to Undercover Capes.
Coming to you from Capes HQ, this is No Prize Podcast. I am your host, the Wonder from Down Under, Dodgy, and with me is Bamfing Bob Anderegg.
Hey, y'all, how are you doing?
Unfortunately, Professor Bud Young is in the negative zone, so he won't be able to join us today. So hopefully you can put up with my voice or our jolly voices today and talk about all things Marvel. So, Bob, I hear that you have something to talk about that happened at New York Comic Con.
Yes. New York Comic Con happened 2 weeks ago, and it was a big hit, and there was a lot of Marvel news that came out of that. But the biggest thing that happened was that the Marvel Netflix Punisher series had a panel scheduled for Thursday, and that was canceled due to the attacks that happened in Las Vegas on late Sunday night, I believe, beforehand. A lot of outrage, both because of the attacks and all of the lives lost, and the people who wanted to hear more about Punisher because they enjoy a violent, gun-happy type character. And so there's a whole lot of conflicting views with that that happened at New York Comic Con. But on a personal note, I just wanted to send out my thoughts and prayers to those who have been injured or lost loved ones in Las Vegas at the music festival by the lone shooter there. And that I 100% agree with Marvel's decision to pull that, because although there is news to be had and people are very curious about Jon Bernthal, new Netflix series, I feel that it's important to let people grieve and to have due respect that gun violence is a big issue in the country, and after a real loss of life and a real emotional situation like this, we need to give those victims some time to grieve. So that was the big news that happened at NYCC. A couple of other things, like the Phoenix is coming back. In the original Phoenix, not just young Jean Grey or daughter Rachel or anybody like that. But we've seen it coming. Same with Wolverine being teased coming back in Legacy number one. We are expecting these things. So that was just the big news out of New York Comic Con. Did you hear anything else stodgy about that?
Or
anything from the convention in particular?
Not a whole lot, but I completely know that that Wolverine is making a comeback. We did see that in Legacy number one, and I was like ultra excited. And if you want to hear more about it, just listen to the previous episode of No Prize Podcast, as Bud and I actually digested the entire book. So and also about Jean Grey, I think that's fantastic. Her coming back as a Phoenix, I mean, such a great character. I really liked having that sort of female presence of supreme power, and I just think it's great that she's making a comeback. I mean, I do like the young Jean Grey, but I still miss the old school Phoenix. But also going back to the Punisher, I mean, it is really bad timing on the part of Marvel if they were to put forward this sort of show in the forefront at a convention. But, you know, as you mentioned before, let people, give people time to grieve. And, you know, you have the internet, you got social media. I mean, Marvel can bring it out at the right time and let fans
embrace. Right, wait a month. Wait for November to show up, and that way people can watch it at their leisure online and make it a big press release there. You're talking about Jean Grey. I think it's interesting that we've had the original five around for some time, and each has had a chance to encounter or speak to their older counterpart. Iceman and Jean Grey both have their own solo series, Old Iceman, Young Jean Grey, and they've both dealt with, or rather, Iceman's dealt with his younger self coming out.
Exactly.
And we've had, Angel and Archangel, Cyclops and Evil Cyclops, whatever you want to call them, and then Beast and New Beast. So seeing Jean Grey deal with the Phoenix in a real physical presence rather than the psychic presence that she's been getting in her solo series, I feel like that it is time for that. It's been a couple of years. Yeah. We need to see that happen.
Indeed, indeed. And...
Now, I missed last week, or rather last pod, where y'all were talking about Legacy number one, so I know that y'all dove into that, but I'm just going to give my quick 2 cents on that. Legacy was a great issue with a lot of content that kind of pulls you into where we're going in the present, as well as referring so much back to what happened thousands of years ago in 1 million BC. I think it's very nice what they did, bringing in old characters, the old Ghost Rider and the new Ghost Rider, the old Nova and the new Nova, and then Odin and Thor and everyone else. So I feel like it could have been a huge flop and a huge mistake on the part of Marvel, but it was a success for me. I thoroughly enjoyed Legacy.
Mm. Yeah, and we did as well, and we basically praised it from beginning to end, and just some of the...
Right, there were hardly any downsides on it, were there? It was a thrill from start to finish for me.
Yeah, and because everything was like a little bit of, oh, this is going to happen, oh, that's going to happen, and oh, this is going to happen, and that's what really got me excited, because you just get the individual pages of individual stories thinking, wow, I'm really looking forward to this.
Right, because you get new stories, and then you also get teases for all the things that you've been waiting for, like the Wolverine tease. You also get a nice Deadpool tease. There's a lot of little nuggets thrown in there so that you still get a new original story that deals with old and new characters, and then you also get things that spawn off to what's happening with the Champions, what's happening with Deadpool, what's happening with, you know, the X-Men. And suddenly you get this one issue that gives you an encompassing view. And that's what's beautiful, because this week and the last couple weeks, we've started to see the renumbering system kick into place. We've started to see new storylines kick off that really kind of go into that, yes, Legacy is a thing and we are moving forward, rather than just trying to rehash the same characters over and over and over again.
Exactly. And there was some other big news throughout the week. We got the trailer of the New Mutants movie.
Oh, God, yes.
And I mean, so, yeah. Well, you go, Bob.
No, this whole week I've been at my grandmother's house sorting through some things, because I might have a trip coming up here soon. And there is no internet. So I was up at 3 a.m., but I could not watch the trailer. So I hurried home and watched it as soon as I could. And holy crap. We've seen a lot of new things with the X-Men movies, right? We've seen Deadpool, and it's rated R, and it's all crass and funny and violent. And then you had Logan, which was also violent, but not near as funny, but just a cinema masterpiece. So the last two X-Men films, aside from X-Men Apocalypse, which in my opinion wasn't a bad film, but it was not near as well received as the last two that I mentioned.
Yes.
Now we're going to have New Mutants coming out in April, and this trailer was not a superhero trailer. There was no piece of superhero in there. It was all horror. It was a thriller, you know, on the edge of the seat, giving you goosebumps kind of horror trailer. Do you want to discuss what happens, or should I?
You go ahead.
Okay. So, we're going into it, and you see Danny Moonstar strapped to a chair and being talked to by Zelie Reyes, and she says, well, have you hurt people? You have abilities? And she's like, yeah, I've hurt people. And she says, do you know what the word mutant means? And then it kicks into this really eerie montage of things happening to these kids. You don't get a whole lot of the other characters aside from Danny. You get a flash of Rain, who's Wolfsbane, but not in wolf form. You get a flash of Sam Guthrie as Cannonball. And you get flashes of magic, Ileana Rasputin, both as a teenager and as a young child, holding a Lockheed stuffed animal, which was a nice homage there. I heard that he's going to be in the movie, but, I mean, even just referencing the character was nice. But you get flashes of, you know, hands going through walls and really creepy, eerie things happening to these characters, but no sight of Demon Baron's sight. But you get this feeling that There is not going to be colored costumes or big supervillain battles or a training montage. You're going to get none of this. It's just going to be these broken characters that are young and new to their powers dealing with just a scary as shit. We don't know what's going to happen. If those of us who've read the comics know about the scary demon bear storyline in New Mutants and very early on in the first 10 issues, I think it was. Very early story that was very terrifying, and we're going to get subjected to a true horror comic book film. Not like Ghost Rider where it's a horror type character, or Blade, or Hellboy, things that have horror elements to it. I feel like this is going to be the scary movie to beat, at least in the first half of 2018. And then on top of it, you have Mutants. That's just an icing on the cake for me. Thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you're right. It's roughly around the time of the Demon Bear saga, but I think it's basically Bill Sienkiewicz's stories that he worked with Chris Claremont within. I think their reign went for about maybe 15 to 20 books working together in the New Mutants run. So I'm really excited to see it because I know the art is eerie. And I'm sure by portraying that into the movie, I think that's what we're getting. And also you're seeing the popularity of all the Sienkiewicz, Claremont books from the New Mutants are becoming more and more popular. I've seen them being sold on eBay at an accelerated rate. I've seen them on Facebook, people wanting to buy them, asking about these books. And I think now is a great time to sit down and start reading this run. You know, it's not only the Demon Bear saga, but also Warlock's father, Magus. You know, he was the first guy to actually draw Warlock, and in that sort of way, and everyone else followed suit and copied it. But yeah, I'm really, really excited to see this because you nailed it on the head. This is not a comic book film. This is a horror film. A horror
with
film.
Comic book characters.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So, you know, who wouldn't want to go see that?
No, and there are a lot of horror books that aren't even related to any superheroes universes whatsoever, mostly by indie creators or indie publishers.
Yes.
But there are horror comics, and if you want horror comics, there is a wide range of things that you can read. But this is, they are taking a X-Men franchise and turning it into a horror series, and there's been recent news and teasing that it was designed as a trilogy. So you could have Celine, like you said, Warlock, and you could throw Doug Ramsey in there because you think of later stuff in Excalibur with Doug Ramsey, and I'll get to Excalibur in a second. But there's Doug Ramsey is kind of a useless character in the New Mutants. He is a mutant who understands all languages, and that comes in handy at times. But in a combat situation, he's terrible.
Exactly.
So I think in a horror film, he would be perfect because he's just an average kid who can't do anything, and he's being supported by all these friends who can do things. And then if you throw in Warlock and his father, and then there's Celine, the psychic.
Mm-hmm.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
All these things have happened in New Mutants, and so you could have a very strong horror trilogy, and that's something that has not been even hinted at or touched upon in superhero movies yet. I think Logan was the closest we got to that.
Oh yeah.
Because there were some scary type elements, but this is edge of the sheet, throwing popcorn in the air, screaming kind of scary. I just thought of this because it was huge news and I forgot to put it on my news. They announced that X-Men Gold Annual number one is going to be the 30th anniversary Excalibur special. That includes, now we know that X-Men Gold has Rachel Gray, who was Phoenix but is now known as Prestige. We have Nightcrawler and Kitty Pryde, and those three were in the original Excalibur lineup of 1988 or 87, if you include the special that Claremont wrote with I think it was Bob McLeod. But they had Excalibur, and it ran for 11 years, and it debuted in 87 technically, so, or 88 was the first issue, 87 was the graphic. So they're celebrating the 30th anniversary with a big Excalibur issue for X-Men Gold, and so they're bringing back Captain Britain and Megan, who now apparently have a baby. And I wrote in to the letters page, hopefully it pops up, because I'm a huge Excalibur fan, easily top three runs of any book. I just love Nightcrawler so much that he has a central role in it, and Kitty Pryde kicks ass the whole time, and I love Megan and Captain Britain's relationship woes back and forth. And then you also have Colossus, who came onto the team later, and he is a member of X-Men Gold as well. So it's going to be a huge reunion. We might see Pete Wisdom. We might see some Wolfsbane, or I doubt we're going to see Doug Locke because, I mean, we know what happened with him. He's not around anymore. But there are several characters that basically fell off the map, including Lockheed. So I'm hoping he pops up as well. But yeah, that's just huge fanboy news for me. Did you ever read Excalibur?
Yes, I did. I do recall the early Alan Davis run. You know, it
did
was
you read the Cross Time Caper.
No, I don't recall. But I have read.
It was in the first 20 issues. It was something like from like issue 9 to issue 20 or 22.
Wow.
And it was just this huge thing where they kicked between different universes and worlds and saw alternate versions of themselves. And it was just a blast that Chris Claremont and Alan Davis had.
Yeah, I do.
It was a great story.
Yeah, I have read individual issues, not the complete run. But, I mean, I do recall seeing these. It sort of reminded me of a 2000 AD book, whereas you just come across these really odd stories. And
yeah,
and I think that's what Alan Davis brought to the table, was just his ability to throw something in there that is very, very odd, very unique looking. And then you got Claremont's writing on top of that. It was just, as you mentioned, right. It's gold.
And then later, I think it was in the 30s and 40s, Alan Davis took over writing and art duties. And so it was his baby. He worked with Mark Farmer, who I met a few months ago
nice.
At a convention. But he and Mark Farmer handled it single-handedly for something like 15 issues. So it was his baby for a long time. So if I ever get a chance to see Alan at a convention, I'm definitely going to take all my Excalibur books and get them signed.
Nice.
And have a nice lengthy conversation with him, because that's some of my favorite work of his and overall in X-Men lore. But that's all for that. Let's talk about recent stuff. Let's get into the meat.
Okay, great. These books are not clobbers, so really I don't have anything I actually want to clobber. I know you have, Bob, on behalf of the Professor Bud Young, but
yeah.
Like, we'll just talk about some of the recent books, and this is a legacy book. It is Avengers number 672 by Mark Waid and Jesus Saez. And this is a fun story, because it's an Avengers Champions crossover. You know, Meteor crashes to the Earth, and the Avengers and the Champions try to make a last ditch, performance to actually stop this meteor from hitting the Earth. And I really enjoyed the relationship between the two teams, because you have, you know, the two Spider-Mans. You have the relationship between, we have Falcon and Ms. Marvel, and their sort of their conflict of interest. I really enjoyed that. And also between Viv and her father, Vision,
yes,
you know, that was amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that was the one time I actually seen Vision appear vulnerable. He was hurt, but he was actually more concerned about his daughter's welfare and the decision she's making. And I found that to be really, really admirable for such a character. You know, we think of Vision as being the background character who may give the odd words of wisdom here or there, but I really liked him being one of the forefront characters. I really enjoyed this book. I really enjoy the way Mark Waid is actually writing the Avengers. He's making it into an absolute team book. And in considering he's implementing the Champions in there as well, I mean, that would not be an easy feat. There's like 16 characters he's writing, and none of them are not mentioned. They're all in there, they're all doing something, and they're all talking. So I really take my hat off to Mark Waid.
Right, and you look at they're also publishing once a month 2-for-1 Vision Director's Cuts issues. And if you haven't read Tom King's work on Vision, I highly recommend it from last couple of years ago. But if you're reading that as well, you see that, you know, the Vision works with his wife, and there's Victor, his cousin, and then there was Viv Vision, who and you see these characters grow. But it's in this book, Avengers 672, where you see Viv is not under her father's shadow anymore. She is her own character. She leads She makes decisions. She is formidable. She is much like her father in that she's right most of the time. And she can calculate on a dime. And she is a valuable asset to the team. As far as crossing over Avengers and Champions, I think it was only natural because three of our champions were actually a part of the Avengers before they split off and created the Champions. So it is like a reunion team, and you get to see them fight this. It's an asteroid, right? Heading toward Earth, a meteor. Yeah, you see them do their individual parts where Nova's taking a crack at it, and Nova, even though he's a teenager on the Champions team, he does a bulk of the work. Yep. Wasp does a great job, and you have the heavy hitters, Hulk and Hercules, on the ground. And see, each team has a heavy hitter like that, too. Cyclops tries his new fastball special with them, and that's really fun seeing a nice play on that. Instead of a strong character throwing a smaller character, it is the other way around.
Yeah, that's true.
But what I love about this comic was that they worked together in tandem, and even though they had their individual teams, they broke off not as, okay, Champions, you go handle the kid stuff.
Yeah.
Avengers, we're handling the big stuff. No, they completely integrated and broke off according to what they can do and how they can contribute. And it was so great seeing the young characters and the older established characters do their thing, and it was just very well written. It was a very fun book. And one more thing. Hercules is actually doing a lot more in comics than I would have thought, because he's also guest starring in this Iceman Legacy reboot, but him starting up with the Champions, an old Champions reunion with Bobby Drake and Angels there, and Darkstar? No, that's wrong. Another character, it's slipping my head. Okay. Female character, Champions number 6. The old one, not the new one. I can't remember her name. I would have to look it up.
That's all right.
But it's really fun seeing Hercules do his thing, too, because it's always Thor, 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 and you never get to see Hercules. So at least he was in two comics in the last 2 weeks, and that was pretty cool. Let's talk about another legacy book that got renumbered. Let's talk about Despicable Deadpool number 287. Did you read that one?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Well, the thing about Despicable Deadpool is that over the recent years, I want to say years because it has been, the anti-hero part of Deadpool has just kind of fallen to the wayside. He's been with the heroes, fighting the bad guys for the sake of all that is good. And now that we are getting out of Secret Empire and he has killed Phil Coulson as well as others, he is now at the forefront of being a bad guy, the bad guy. And it's sad, but it's a part of the character that makes him really fun to read about. And in Despicable Deadpool, he is fighting Cable. And Cable's like, no, you're a bad guy. You have to be beaten. And Deadpool won't have it. The art is absolutely gorgeous. It's very gritty. Scott Koblish does that, and he's done a lot of stuff on the previous Deadpool titles. But in Despicable, it's just so much more bloody. Jerry Dugan also does the writing. But there's something about this that feels so much more organic for the character of Deadpool versus trying to water him down with a, you know, hero save the day, chimichanga joke kind of thing. It's really gritty and to the point of dismembering himself and trying to utilize Cable's powers to go in time and kill Cable. And with the new Deadpool movie coming out, I think they might be building up to the hype train for Cable versus Deadpool in Deadpool 2. Thoughts?
Oh, well, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it myself, and I'm not a really big Deadpool fan, and I proudly admit that, but this book actually got me because you have Deadpool acting like a little bit like the Terminator. You know, he's beating Cable, and Cable's trying to outrun him, but Deadpool's not taking a backward step. He's just hunting him down, and it is so violent. But on the on the flip side though, it was really, really fun to see because you actually get the introduction in this book. If this is what you're used to in the previous Deadpool books, this book was completely different, and they answered that completely with a T. as well as the fact you did see a hint of this from the in Legacy number one. You mentioned before they had the Deadpool story. Right. Yeah, and that was like that was not the Deadpool I'd be used to seeing. I'd be used to seeing the cartoonish, you know, the animated eyes. But no, we didn't get that. We saw something that was like it looked like Deadpool just had a really shitty day, and that's what you get in this book. He's not, you know, there is a bit of that humor in the book, but it's nowhere near as animated in previous stories. And like, if this is the way the Deadpool is going to be written, I think it's going to attract a lot more readers. You know, you're going to have your hangers on, plus you're going to get people who prior, like myself, didn't really like Deadpool much as a character because he's everywhere. But getting a book like this and just keeping it this, I mean, holy crap! I'd be putting this in my pull list. You know, the fight scenes with Cable were awesome. It was just a surprise hit, and also the title of this mini arc is called "Deadpool Kills Cable Part 1." I mean, that's what you're gonna get, but we have to wait and see Part 2 and possibly Part 3 if there is a Part 3. But like, this is a great starting point if you're looking for a new Deadpool story. Jump in and check it out.
Yeah, because I mean, the very first appearance of Deadpool in New Mutants 98 was him trying to kill Cable. And there's a beautiful line in this comic where he says, "It's almost like I have a legacy of trying to kill you." And it's like, oh, see, there's a very subtle way of Deadpool breaking the fourth wall. This is a legacy issue where it goes straight back to renumbering. It throws back to the Deadpool versus Cable bromance that they have, where it's a love-hate relationship. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing, there are jokes and it is fun to read about, but I feel like this is old fun Deadpool. It's not, you know, fart joke, sex joke, eat a burrito, kill a guy, back to making jokes. No, this is an all-out hunt, and I think Deadpool, this may be one of the most true to character Deadpool comics that I have read in a while. Even with Deadpool Spider-Man coming out, which is a great book, and some of his other stuff that he's done with the Deadpool Merc for Money, and a lot of these crossovers, which aren't always great. I feel like those are very hit and miss. Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe was a miss. But I feel like this, being a despicable Deadpool, I am all for it. So what else do you want to talk about?
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to talk about a book that's not a renumbering, but it's a new number, and that is Spirits of Vengeance number 1 by Victor Gersha with art by David Baldion. So you know, from the very beginning of the book, you see Johnny Blaze enjoying a coffee at a bar, and then he meets a fella who looks a little bit like him. He basically burns up and dies, and he gives him a bullet, and he goes, says, "Give this to Damien Hellstrom." So he meets up with Damien Hellstrom and goes on like a little mission to find out the origin of this bullet that Johnny Blaze was given. And those of you who don't know Damien Hellstrom, he is the son of Satan. And I really enjoyed it because the art is friggin' gorgeous. Like, I really enjoyed Baldion's art. And I did like this wild goose chase of trying to find out some answers. And then we're going to meet the other members in the future. And we do come across a member, and that is Blade. And it sort of reminds me of the Night Stalkers of the early to mid-90s. Which was under the Spirits of Vengeance sort of little tier in Marvel back in the day. I really enjoyed those stories because you mentioned it before about horror. I think this would be a great story if it's written well, but I do like the fact you've got Johnny Blaze, you've got Hellstrom. There's also going to be Santana coming as well. Did you get a chance to check it out?
I did, actually. What I liked about Spirits of Vengeance is that, you know, we had a Blade trilogy with Wesley Snipes, and we've had several Ghost Rider stories with Nicolas Cage as Ghost Rider. And some of them hit, some of them didn't. Mm-hmm. But what I like about this is that it gives new readers a chance to enjoy Johnny Blaze and not Robbie Reyes, who they've been seeing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and in the Ghost Rider ongoing that has been in Marvel Comics. We get old Johnny Blaze, classic Ghost Rider on a motorcycle, and teaming up with these other dark characters, demonic characters. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get to see Mephisto pop up. We get to see a lot of the Marvel underbelly, dark, demonic, supernatural characters show up in this. And I think it's a strong anti-hero team book that we have going here. I agree with you on the art. It's very dynamic. A lot of flames, very well colored. But overall, I think that the gradual build up with the characters, not meeting Satana yet, but knowing that she's showing up, will give an appeal to people that like that character and think that Damien Hellstrom isn't enough to hook people on. Because Blade can carry his own book.
Oh, yeah.
So can Ghost Rider. But Damien Hellstrom can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by putting him on a team book is nice. Also, I'm going to shout this out now, even though he's on everything. Robbie Thompson is doing 3-page backups on every single book that comes out with Legacy. And it's a rundown of the characters and their short histories and what's happened recently so that anybody can pick up a book without reading anything other than that and know what's happening with the character, who they are, and how they're moving forward. They're all written by Robbie Thompson, but Mark Bagley's done a few. Anthony Piper does this one. I've seen a couple of other artists, and I can't think of them off the top of my head, but when I find a new one, I'll be sure to let you know, because I'm going to be scrolling through all of my books. But it does a great job of just giving the readers the basic idea of the character, and so when you move forward, you don't feel like I got to read X amount of back issues to know what's happening.
Mm.
And you've mentioned that you really enjoy Mark Bagley's work on this as well, haven't you?
Yes, correct.
So we're really in the meat of things. And Spirits of Vengeance was a great comic. I've never been much for the supernatural side of it, because I am a superheroes kind of guy. But then again, I've also expressed a lot of interest in the New Mutants horror thing, so maybe there's a new leaf and I'm just maturing as a reader, because it looks pretty good. I think it looks like it's moving forward quite a bit.
Definitely. So what other Legacy book have you checked out?
All right, well, let's talk about X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue number 13. Now, while these are not Legacy renumberings like we were talking about in general, I think it's important that we talk about what happens with the Mojoverse crossover. In X-Men Gold number 13 came out 2 weeks ago. We have X-Men Blue's team, which has the original five, as well as Logan's son from another universe. They're all playing baseball with the members of X-Men Gold who I've mentioned before. There's also Bloodstorm, who recently appeared in X-Men Blue's storyline with Beast summoning alternate versions of Dark X-Men. So they're playing baseball and they get a distress call, and these big giant spires are coming from space. And so they go check it out in different teams, and it's a ruse by Mojo of the Mojoverse to put them on television and rehash their greatest hits, which means that all of the best stories that involve the X-Men, Dark Phoenix, Mutant Massacre, Age of Apocalypse, Days of Future Past, all these things, they're like, okay, well, these are famous battles, and so we are going to recreate them on television, and it's going to be interactive for the viewer, where you can vote on what happens, and you can play along. It's just a big thing, almost a social media thing that Mojo's trying and getting them all to play along. And it's just beautifully done. And that continues in X-Men Blue number 13, where you get to see all these little teams dealing with things like Inferno and Asgard. It's just a really fun read that you get to see all these characters deal with each other and learn and fight together, and I'm having a blast. You know I'm an X-Men fan, but this is just above and beyond what I was expecting, because these two tentpole books for X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold, they're what's drawing people in. You have things like Generation X and Cable and Iceman. These things are keeping people interested, but Blue and Gold are what's keeping people on the line. Mm. And they're Mojo's a great character, and I think it's just so smart to do at this time, because they've already had a dozen issues each, so I'm all on board. Did you enjoy him?
Yes, I did. I mean, I've always enjoyed Mojo. I remembered him from the early X-Men run with Jim Lee, especially, I think it was X-Men number 10, when it had the two teams combined and they were all held captive and they were saved by Longshot and Dazzler. So we sort of see that again in this arc, but it's still early days. There's going to be, I think, four other stories coinciding with this. So we're getting... what's it called? Mojo Worldwide issue one, or part one and part two, with X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue. So I'm really excited for it. And you nailed on the head. It's fun seeing the teams being separated and doing their own thing. And what happens to Bloodstorm was a bit of a shock. I mean, it really shocked the X-Men too. Like, their reactions painted a thousand words. So even though you said that she's a she's like a demonic version of Storm that was summoned by Beast's powers, or his magic powers. But I really enjoyed the reaction and just seeing them all look really, really pissed off. And, I do like seeing sort of be that Donald Trump type character from The Apprentice. He's got that persona of, I'm controlling the media. If I don't like something, I'm going to reshoot. And he does. And he's just on the air so often. And I really enjoyed that because, there's sort of an introduction to the story. And it sort of says, this is how Hollywood is kind of like nowadays. So I really enjoyed that twist to it. I did actually like Beast's new appearance in this. How he's portrayed in, I think it was what was the name of the story? The Fall of the Mutants. Whereas, Jean is sort of dressed in the Goblin Queen's outfit that Madeline Pryor wore, and how Beast looked, was pretty cool as well. You mentioned before about the OG stories. It's tremendous. And I also like the flow through between, Guggenheim and Cullen Bunn's, working in tandem, because it's not, you almost feel like you're reading the same story from the same writer, but to have two different writers on the same page and actually tell the same story is tremendous. I really enjoyed both stories, and you're right, this is a win for the X-Men books. Anyone who's even contemplating reading the X-Men, I think these are the two books you should be reading. That's my opinion.
Yeah, you could just jump on X-Men Gold number 13 and get a really fun new, because even though they're not legacy books, it is a very nice jumping off point with two good teams. You were saying about Cullen Bunn and Mark Guggenheim. I'm loving what they've been doing. I've been a Bunn fan for a long time, and this is Mark's first real foray in comics, because he's been doing a lot of stuff for TV with Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow, but this is his first big writing gig for comics, and I think he's been nailing it. Aside from a couple of weird dialogue moments where he does a lot of repetition and keeps it really simple, the stories that he's crafting is just amazing. So X-Men Gold and Blue are both very well worth picking up, and I highly recommend them, because Mojo, he's a great character. And I'm not sure if we're going to see the X-Babies in this. It's very possible. It's very, very possible, because on multiple occasions he has made them into Rugrat versions of themselves.
Yes, he has.
And it's a very fun idea. So who knows? We may get that as well. And if they do, I might get those slapped. I might have to frame that, because I love X-Babies.
Nice.
Okay, what else do you got?
Yeah, well, this is another X book. It's All New Wolverine number 25 by Tom Taylor and Juan Cabral. It's called Orphans of X Part 1. This was quite a unique book. We see, and I'm going to say unique, it's sort of like, it's almost like they're dealing, Laura is dealing with sort of like a cult Because they actually they kidnap or they don't really kidnap, they actually freaking kill or supposedly kill their her half brother Dakin. So I was quite shocked to read this. I do love the chemistry though between Laura and Gabby, her little sister. You know, I love the relationship between the two. I actually really dig her hoodie as well. It's sort of
Oh
a
yeah,
mock-up of
that
Wolverine
Wolverine. Oh
costume.
yeah,
Yeah, I actually
his
want that.
eyes on the helmet.
That's pretty cool. But you know, I like you like reading this, there's not a whole lot I can tell you, but this is like a murder mystery, or is it a murder? I mean, the only thing that she has as evidence is Dakin's arm, so who knows what happens. And it was really intriguing. And it's a part one of a probably a multi-line story. But if you like something, especially with such a powerful character like Laura is now, you know, she's really killing it as Wolverine. I don't ever think she's gonna lose that mantle. You know, I know that OG Wolverine's coming back, but I think the all new is here to stay.
I think that there's going to be a lot for original Logan to do when he comes back, but being Wolverine, he's kind of lost that position because what's going to happen with Old Man Logan? We have Laura, and now if we have another Wolverine come back, you have to ask, where does he fit in? Is he just going to try to assimilate back into the X-Men teams along with Old Man Logan and have two Logans running around and then Wolverine? Like it's going to be an odd dynamic, but I have faith in Marvel and they're going to treat it right because the last few new characters that we've had come back from the dead have been treated with respect, I think. But I kind of got the same feeling from All New Wolverine as I did from the newest Daredevil issue. Did you read that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well, he goes off to, I think, is it Japan or China?
China.
Okay, he goes off to China because his old sidekick, protege, Blindspot, sends him a cryptic message in the mail. And he goes to settle a score and try to save him, but in reality, he defected over and he's working with a villain to beat Daredevil and basically drain him with fear. And he keeps Daredevil in a cage. And I kind of draw that similarity between All New Wolverine and Daredevil because it's two characters that they're not working with a lot, and it's almost like we know they're in a trap, right? We know that they're being targeted, and yet it's still really fun to watch them try to work through the conflict of the story. And I'm hoping that Daredevil can get out of it, just like Laura can, help Dakin out. But I mean, both books were great, and I really enjoyed them. I didn't read, I did read All New Wolverine, but I didn't invest too much in it because I'm just so into all the other books that it's kind of hard to dive into every one of
No,
them.
of course, I totally agree. One thing I did like about the book though is Gani's art. It's perfect, like in almost every element. I just love the shading, and I think it has to do a lot with the colorist, Matt Miller. His coloring in this book is almost reminds me a bit of, a little bit of David Mack, the watercolors and the grainy colors. I really enjoyed that in this book. And just the shading was just, especially with you mentioned Daredevil sort of trapped underground, having that conversation with Sam, aka Blindspot, and just having that shade of the grills of the mesh lid that was containing him was tremendous. And I liked it a lot more than that I thought I would. And I really liked the fact that you learn a lot more about Sam as you read this book. There's a bit of a backstory about him. Which I really enjoyed. I definitely suggest checking it out. I'm actually surprised this one was not renumbered, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. But they started last month with the new Daredevil on the first part of this, so maybe they just felt like they missed the train and they're like, well, we'll just finish out this storyline and then start renumbering. But I mean, you never know. Let's see, what else do we have here? Did you read the the Star Wars books at all?
No, I didn't.
No, okay. I'm just going to touch on them very, very briefly. The two that I really liked of the last couple of weeks is Darth Vader number 6 and Dr. Aphra number 13, mostly because of the cool fight scenes. Dr. Aphra, this was a better issue than I've seen in recently, but what's really cool that you have Darth Vader fighting a robotic Jedi that has the crystal that has it contains a crystal of an essence of a Jedi master, and so it can access the knowledge of the Jedi but not the Force, and so he's fighting Darth Vader, and there's just some really cool fight scenes there, and Dr. Aphra has to maneuver that. But in Darth Vader number 6, we see one of the coolest Star Wars weapons that I've ever seen. Guy's fighting with a lightsaber. It's really cool. It has like a wrist guard on it, and he's fighting. And then midway through the battle, it folds around itself to create a circle around his hand, and a second lightsaber pops up out like Darth Maul. But instead of being stationary, it spins around itself to create a fan of a lightsaber. So there's two lightsabers spinning around this guy's hand, and that's how he's fighting. And it is just so visually stimulating, and it is just a cool weapon that I thought lightsabers were cool before that. Mm. And then they threw that in, and I'm like, man, that's badass. That's really, really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I wasn't like too intrigued with the storyline because they are good, but they're not, you know, mind blowing. But just seeing the cool fight scenes, seeing that artistically put on paper, was a big deal for me. What about you? How many more do you have? Because I don't want to take too long talking about every issue.
Yeah, I've got Venom number 155. Okay. This was a sleeper hit for me because I haven't been a real big fan of the previous Venom books until, since Venom Space Knight. I absolutely love that run. Absolutely love Venom Space Knight. But this one is by Mike Costa, and what was a saving grace to read this was the art by Mark Bagley. As you know, I'm a big Bagley fan. Yeah. And the reason why it surprised me because of the fact that his art, I guess it could also be related to the inker as well, but the art was gorgeous all the way through. The scene with Lee Price was a bit of a stirring in the pot because you see him in prison. I was thinking of Lee Price as being like a wiry, weak so-and-so, but in prison, he's a freaking badass. And then we go underground and we see Venom in between a battle between the dinosaur people and the Moloids. I really enjoyed that scene. The art, you know, the action sequences were friggin' awesome. And the way Venom kills that giant monster that actually eats him, takes him in one fell swoop, and then he bursts in through the top of its head. I really dig that. But it's just the last page that really got me excited because hearing about the dinosaurs and whatnot, Kraven the Hunter needs some more heads on his wall, or any
right, because now he's Kraven the Trainer too, right?
Yeah, and yes, exactly. So I really dug that book. Did you check it out?
Yeah, I did. Not a big Venom fan. I was honestly just so burnt out from Edge of Venomverse and then Venomverse and the old Venom and now the new Venom. It's too much for me. As a classic character with Eddie Brock, I was a big fan, but it's just been so oversaturated that I just can't get into it anymore. And you're right, the issue that you're talking about had some really great moments in it. I'm not going to lie, there were some fun moments, but it's just hard for me to invest when I'm like, oh, well, Venom. You know, it's just, it's lost its spark for me. I don't know what it is. But it's hard for me to get excited about it.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's a couple more that I want to discuss, but I think the most important one is Falcon number 1, and then I can just spitball. Or you know what? I'll spitball what I have, and then I'll go into Falcon number 1, and then we'll talk about the clobber that Bud wanted us to talk about. How does that sound?
Absolutely fine.
Okay. So in Gwenpool number 21, the only reason that I want to talk about this is because – We get to see Paste Pot Pete in this issue, and he's such a stupid villain. But it's fun to watch because Gwen just got out of this whole storyline where she learns that her real superpower is that she knows she's in a comic book, so she can manipulate the borders and the text and all sorts of things. And it's just it is the coolest type of meta that it is. It's not just that you know that you're in a comic book; it's that you can manipulate the page and the panel and the dialogue boxes to your needs. So it's really fun for her, but she deals with Paste Pot Pete, and he's so stupid. But it was just fun seeing him, and I hope that I see a cosplay of Paste Pot somewhere. Then we had Jessica Jones number 13, and what I loved about this issue, did you read it?
No, I didn't.
No, okay. Jessica Jones number 13, we get Purple Man, right? And
nice.
After we saw Kilgrave in the Jessica Jones story mm-hmm. on Netflix, and he had his little time with Daredevil like 6 months ago or something like that,
mm-hmm.
he is at the forefront of this, and the real shock is that she's guarding herself against everybody who could be manipulated by the Purple Man because she's scared, genuinely terrified of this guy. And final panel of the issue, her baby, 2 years old or less, is saying, so, Jessica, I missed you. It's such – it tears your heart out because now, Jessica knows that her child is under the control of the Purple Man. And it's just – the last few issues have lost my interest, but you have my attention, Jessica Jones. You have it. Uncanny Avengers number 28, we see Beast and Wonder Man fighting together, having a good time.
Nice.
All I cared about in this issue. There were other things that happened, but just seeing that team up, seeing that it might have a future somewhere, keeps me on the hook. You had Ms. Marvel number 23, and what I like – did you read that one?
Ms. Marvel? No, I didn't. I did not.
Well, another character from the Middle East comes and visits New Jersey to see Kamala. And there's a train that the brake has gone on it, but it's only going 25 miles an hour. It is a very slow train wreck waiting to happen. And there's little things they have to do to fix it, make sure the bridge is clear and make sure that the civilians are safe. Little things that need to be done, but it's a great metaphor for them. They even mention it. Is that it's like, wow, that's my life. It's like the slowest train wreck waiting to happen. And you're constantly trying to put out these little fires. But overall, it's just – you're just waiting for it to happen. And at the end of the issue, it finally – it's like, well, I guess the train's finally about to crash. And then it leaves you hanging for the next one. But I just like that it's a lot of character focus. And it's not high-octane action waiting. It's just little things and character development. And sometimes those are the best stories. The big action sequences sometimes water it down, don't you think?
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing. We'd like to see some more progressive storytelling and something that's a bit more, that we can take away with us. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Rather than it just be watered down and boring and nah.
Yeah, And I mean, Spider-Man number 21 was really cool too, but I mean, it's one of those things where you just need to read it. He goes over to he goes overseas to Asia and he gets a suit and he fights a lot of ninjas and he channels Jackie Chan. And it's just, there's some throwbacks to his uncle who was the Prowler, and just there's some fun moments in it, but I just recommend you read that. Did you want to mention any more before we jump into Falcon number 1?
Yes, if I may, I want to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number 789. Oh, I'm sorry, brother. I want to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number 789.
Damn it, I forgot that one. Yes.
Whoa. You're welcome.
Talk about that one and then Falcon. Yes, we need to talk about that one. Go ahead.
Yes, and I really enjoyed this by Dan Slott with art by Stuart Immonen. Fall of Parker, Part 1. It was really – it's really nice to see this sort of vulnerability in such a character. Peter Parker loses, Parker Industries. He's also losing himself at the same time. And he's living with Bobby, you know, the Mockingbird, which I was a bit surprised that these two were working together, because I've never really seen them, like, not to say I've never seen them in the same book together, but not to see them actually this close. You know, he loses his friends and allies at the Daily Bugle. He goes in and sort of, he creates a scene in the Bugle about stuff that's written about him, about defaming him, you know. And, you know, and Robbie Robinson's like, mate, you know, this is the truth. We're not lying about this stuff. This is everything we've said is true. And then Parker's like, he's sunk, and he's like, yeah, you're right. And he accepts it. So it was a tough one to read, because, you know, we've all gone through this sort of emotional roller coaster in our lives, and I think the saving grace to the story, and not to say this was a bad book at all, but to save the grace of Peter Parker, the character, was Bobby's like, come on, get your costume on, we're gonna go out and fight some crime, and they do, and then you sort of see his confidence sort of build up again. But oh man, I thought this book was an absolute flame on. It was a great first of a legacy run, and I truly, truly enjoyed it.
No, and what I loved about it is that, you know, on the cover, it's a headline, and it's like, Peter Parker, menace or threat? Mm. And you see, you know, Peter Parker is now the bad guy. So when you see Spider-Man going in, and people are trying to throw crap on him, saying, well, you're associated with Peter Parker, so yeah, you're a bad guy. And that's a complete 180 from what it was when it said, oh, Peter Parker, you know Spider-Man, so you must, you know, be knee-deep in it when he's off doing bad stuff, or, you know, when J. Jonah Jameson is defaming him in the Daily Bugle.
Exactly.
People relate Peter Parker to Spider-Man. But in this issue, it's them saying, oh, Spider-Man, you know Peter Parker? You're a dick.
Yeah.
And when Spider-Man finally comes through and saves the day, they're like, yay, Spider-Man. And for the first time ever, it feels like Spider-Man is the hero and Peter Parker, to the eye of the public, is a villain.
Yes.
And and that's an amazing foil for what it's always been, where Spider-Man's been a misunderstood hero and Peter Parker's just your average Joe. Mm. And that's what I loved about the issue, because having Bobby Morrison and having them have a relationship, that was nice, you know, having him trying to recover from the terrible financial and business and character problems that he's had. Seeing Spider-Man get praised and then Peter Parker going back to just slumming it and being on everyone's shit list, that, to me, was the biggest takeaway from this issue.
Mm. Totally. And yeah, and you're right, because you do see the moments when Parker's walking down the street. He foolishly, he's thinking, because I'm Peter Parker, nobody knows who I am. He gets just more stuff thrown at him as Peter Parker than he does as Spider-Man, which you just touched on. And I think that was a great mention in the book.
I really liked it. Okay, so let's finish with our last flame, which was Falcon number 1. Did you like it, or did you read it?
I'm a bit mixed, because I loved you know, the Nick Spencer run on the Captain America, yeah, which had Sam Wilson.
Both of those books were so good.
Mm.
Yeah, like both Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson Captain Americas, both of them were just phenomenal. So moving forward at all is it's going to be new for Falcon number 1. And so you're a mixed bag. What didn't you like about it?
Well, I just think it was just the direction it was heading. I'm really enjoyed, and also I think the costume change as well. I think I became so accustomed to the way he looked as Captain America. I think they should have sort of kept that look about him, but not change it too much. I know they can't keep the star, or, you know, keep the Captain America look about him, but
right, but a happy medium, something in the middle.
Okay. I think him teaming up with the Patriot was pretty cool with Sean. I think that is a good thing, because I think now Falcon is the mentor, and then he's got his protege or his sidekick, which I think is what Falcon was in the Captain America series of the late 70s or mid to late 70s. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that. You know, I don't know. I think it could also be the art as well. It's you know, as I said, Bob, I've been reading the past issues with Nick Spencer's run of Falcon or as Captain America, and I really enjoyed that character. I just think because it's the first issue, maybe I'm a bit too harsh. I didn't enjoy it because I guess it just didn't appeal to me as much as the previous runs have done. But you know what? It's just a personal opinion. I mean, that may change when issue two comes out. I might enjoy it a little bit more. There were some darker elements to the story as well, especially with Blackheart at the end. I think that could create something, but again, it's just a personal preference. I'm not hating the book. I'm just a bit mixed.
Yeah, because my favorite part about Sam Wilson doing the Secret Empire was that he went to the roots and he was trying to help people on the ground level, trying to be inspirational and helpful. And in this issue, there's quite a few moments where he has to play an intermediary between two gangs in, I believe it's Chicago.
Mm.
Is that correct? Okay. And he's trying to get these two gangs to cooperate with each other with Patriot's help. And it's not all Falcon. A lot of this is seeing Sam Wilson just trying to be a leader for the common man. And it backfires on him hard. And it creates pandemonium. And that's what you're saying with Blackheart in the end. But you see, he has the best intentions, and he's making good things happen. But the writing in this, I feel like, is very well done. There was a recent interview / review done on ComicCrusaders.com about this, or maybe it was Geekery. I'm not 100% sure, but it talked with the creator, and Rodney Barnes writes this, and I think he does the monologue narration. I think he does it really well, and I think he captures Sam Wilson pretty well. But on that note, let's channel Bud for a second, and I'm just going to read verbatim what he said on our chat about the Hulk number 11.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm going to put my own two cents in, but this is what he says. He says, "Please, someone clobber Hulk. Please, please, please. Just read it. First of all, the tone of that series has been the life of Jennifer Walters, which has pissed me off anyway, and we all know that. But in the previous 10 issues, there's been no fourth wall breaking. I realize Byrne was the originator of the fourth wall breaking with his excellent work on the character 20 years ago. But that is not the tone for this terrible series. It goes more off the rails here with the inexplicable fourth wall breaking in this issue. The concept is already being effing beaten to death in Deadpool and Gwenpool, way better in Gwenpool. And it's very put out off place here, given the established pace of the series. This has honestly been the worst take on She-Hulk I have ever written or ever read ever. The worst plot, the worst pacing, the worst characterization, the worst direction. I hate it, like, hate it, hate it." End quote. So, when I read Hulk, I saw it and I was like, oh, this is a fun new take on it. But throughout the entire issue, she's referencing thought bubbles and monologue, and going to the point of physically taking them and throwing them across, like, to different pages. And Hellcat jumps in and breaks the fourth wall. And it's a big date montage. And overall, it could be fun and funny. But not for this book. Because Hulk, number 1 through 10, has been very serious. Dealing with Jen and the dual identity. Now she's no longer just She-Hulk, big and green all the time. She now has to fight between normal Jen and big green rage monster. And, or gray now, I suppose. Big gray rage monster. And it's just been a very serious, character-driven, not well done, but still character-driven story about Jennifer Walters. And this is just a goofy mess that's in between this serious stuff and the new legacy thing kicking off between her versus the leader. And it's going to be She-Hulk number 159. They are changing the name from Hulk to She-Hulk because, let's face it, she's She-Hulk. That's what she's been all the time. They changed her to Hulk to try to distance her from that gender assigned name. and to say that Bruce Banner's gone. But really, I think Jen Walters will always be She-Hulk. And I think Bud hit it on the head when he said that Gwenpool is doing it way better with two heavy fourth wall breaking characters,
mm-hmm.
and Jennifer not having done it for a long time. I feel like them throwing it in now, it's almost like a goofy one shot that it is an actual continuation of a story. And it was just overall, it was just poorly done and poorly realized. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think but based on what Bud has said in the past, I mean, that's the reason why I don't want to read it. It's because of just such the negativity he has towards it, because he wants it to be a successful book.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, we all do. I mean, we all, like, I really enjoyed Jennifer Walters, especially in the Fantastic Four in the 80s, in the early 90s. She was with the Avengers. She was a fun character. She was fun because she had that that vibrance, you know. She was energetic, but I just think with the story in the Hulk, it's just all about her as a character, and we're not getting the titular character we're supposed to be receiving. You know, where is she? Where is the Hulk? You know, she's supposed to become She-Hulk. She's supposed to transform. And I mean, I think like Bud was complaining like 6 issues in, and she still hasn't changed yet. Only on the cover is she the Hulk, so...
Right.
Yeah.
In this issue, she does turn into the Hulk, and she does fight robots, and she does do heroic stuff, which is cool. But I think if they had started at issue 1 with this goofy, fun, wall-breaking, reality-like, manipulating character, because even Hellcat jumps into it, and that tells me that it's not Jennifer Walter breaking the fourth wall. This is the writer trying to break the fourth wall through his characters. And yeah. That's wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
If you're going to do it, you have to do it through the character. And if you make it – because she even mentioned it. She's like, hey, fourth wall breaking, that's my shtick. And, like, it's – if it had been from issue 1, this weird, goofy character, then you could have said, oh, it's a new direction for the character. This is going to be a fun ride. But yeah. No, we've had 10 issues of – mopey character trying to find herself story with, you know, like dramatic, like horror aspects to it. And then you have this goofy nyuk nyuk kind of BS. And then after one issue of this goofy crap, we're going to go into the legacy stuff. I'm not sure if we're moving forward with it goofy or not, but after this one issue, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm going to like it. I didn't like the last few issues, like Bud, but I also didn't like this one either. So maybe She-Hulk's not my thing, but I'm not sure that's the case, because I've enjoyed She-Hulk comics before. So maybe it just needs a – this is one of the books that needs scrapped and like really restarted in Legacy and not just renumbered. But that's just me. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's...
But on that happy note, I think I think it's about time to wrap things up.
Yeah, definitely. So guys, if you enjoyed the content, please check us out at undercovercates.com and noprizepodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter as well as Facebook. But on behalf of myself and Banffy Bob, we had a whole lot of fun talking about Marvel. And as we always do, we make ours Marvel. But yeah, definitely check us out and have a good one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and one more thing before we go. Next time, I may not be here because I'm going on a trip overseas for an interview. So everyone, wish me luck. And I'm hoping for the best. But yeah, 2 weekends from now, I will not be available. So... have fun at the podcast next time. And until then, I'm Bamfing Bob. This has been Dodgy. And I'll talk to you all later.
Bye-bye.
This has been a production of Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Make sure to check out our websites, undercovercapes.com and comiccrusaders.com. Also, check us out on Facebook at No Prize Podcast and follow us on Twitter @No Prize Podcast. Make sure you like, share, and tell everybody. We'll see you next time.